Should old acquaintance be forgot and never brought to mind? Should old acquaintance be forgot and days of old?
You could never imagine a developer starting with a big ball and hammer in the middle of Sloane Square and thinking of changing the facade of Mayfair or any of those sort of areas. This is New Zealand's remarkable collection of wooden colonial buildings that centre around 1870 as almost a complete set.
My house would vibrate constantly, and every now and then furniture and crockery would crash, and I would run off to the Ministry of Works and ask for £10 to replace my ornaments. And
did they cough up?
Oh, yes, yes. Anything to stop me from going to the press again.
The Ministry of Works modus operandi was very, very ruthless, without any concern whatsoever for the people involved.
This is really not my home. Where are you, my lovely Jenny? I'm afraid and I'm alone. There's no peace for me.
The traumatic demolitions in Thorndon in the 1960s and 70s saw the motorway carving a swathe through Wellington's oldest suburb and its historic Bolton Street Cemetery. Developers, the Ministry of Works and City Council saw Thorndon as a slum which could profitably be replaced with glossy high-rise tower blocks. But they had not reckoned with the determination and stubbornness of Thorndonites. The Thorndon Trust, mainly through the work of lawyer Shirley Smith, architect Martin Hill and TV researcher Gillian McGregor, managed to buy four houses in a threatened area and eventually got council protection for a group of 105 houses dating back to the 1850s, in an area known as the E-Zone. It was an historic first. You might think that it would be an easy step from there to win protection for all of Thorndon's older housing stock, 80% of which were built before 1930. But that struggle was to take the Thorndon Society, the residential group which grew from the Thorndon Trust, 23 more years. Two of the Thorndon Society's most determined battlers were economist Mervyn Pope and actor and craftsman Tony Burton.
How did early developers in the area see the Thorndon Society in those early days?
I don't think we were perceived as being hard-nosed.
What did people used to say about you in the early days, in the early 80s? Were you not called the despotic watchdogs and the Thorndon Mafia?
I think that we were certainly, that epithet, along with many, many others, was certainly launched at us. I think no one in Thorndon would have been unaware of the antipathy towards the Thorndon Society. I remember the whole of the Prime Minister's frontage being painted with a sign, "Kill the Thorndon Society." I can remember with Mervyn Pope and myself being threatened with grievous bodily harm.
And do you ever take that seriously?
No. No, you could accept that, you know, everyone's allowed their perception of what is the correct thing to do. And I remember there were those who held a very strongly different opinion to ourselves, who really thought the Thorndon was a slum and that the bulldozer was the better answer to it, and that Wellington would be far better appointed by a new development. As a shiny development rather than this rather decrepit, and it really was quite decrepit at the time. The use of the buildings was at risk. Peppercorn rental people were moving
in. So did Mervyn say you need people with money to come in here or what?
Indeed, he said, well, that's what would have to happen. There's no way in hell that the money that is required to refurbish these buildings can come out of the existing residential users. So you'd have to go into a promotional sense of trying to attract people and that sort of money into Thorndon. And the only way you would do that is by getting a greater planning certainty.
Blinded by your city lights, I wander through these fearful places. Colors fade to black and white, there's no peace for me.
Neil Harrop, musician, restaurateur and entrepreneur, was exactly the sort of risk-taker Thorndon needed in those early times. He saw Thorndon's charm and spent years restoring dozens of houses, cafes and shops in Thorndon's southern St Mary Street area. Like Martin Hill, he recognised how dependent old houses and gardens were on each other, and he was perhaps the first to demonstrate the softening effect of planting trees in your own street.
But in the dark, struggle cold, I think about a garden bough. Gentle as the leaves unfold.
And I looked at this area and I thought, what a wonderful area, you know, the park across the street, sheltered from the wind. Tons and tons of character, history, magnificent old buildings, though they were almost without exception in very poor repair. And so that was another opportunity that I perhaps saw ahead of a few others. So I guess I'd describe myself as an opportunist.
as somebody an inventor
who,
too.
an inventor, somebody who, you know, I think I have an ability to be able to see things a little way off, sometimes before the most people do. And I've got enough courage or risk-taking component of my personality to be prepared to go and investigate and develop ideas.
Yeah. Do you remember which was the first building in Thorndon that you re-established?
Well, I bought two cottages at 8 and 10 St Mary Street in 1972, in August, for $7,750. But there's two run-down cottages, they were leaning against each other for support, almost, and when I bought them, I was pretty green. My father looked at them and said, "We've got a huge job here, Sonny." And somebody came by and they said, "Oh, how long do you think before these things will be demolished?" And I thought, God, they're not going to be demolished, they're going to be restored, because I'd seen restoration overseas. And I'd had the very good fortune to live in Charleston, South Carolina in the 60s, where restoration was actively taking place with a very strong organization, the Historic Charleston Foundation. And so I knew that these sort of areas could be turned around, and I believed that Thorndon was one of those areas. So I restored the two cottages, and at the time, it created a bit of a stir. I mean, nobody really could see, none of the politicians or the people that investors, I guess, could see the potential in the area being restored. I mean, restoration was still pretty much a new sort of a green tinge sort of an idea that it's a bit suspect. And I think a lot of people thought that this area was just going to turn into some kind of a Stalin-esque concrete blocked low-income housing or something. But fortunately, because of the efforts, I think, mainly because of the efforts of the Thorndon Society and Chris Cochran restoring his house and others, and perhaps myself restoring these cottages over here, that we're able to turn it around.
People could start to see that not only could you make money out of restoring those houses, but how lovely they looked.
And they could see that people began to see the charm of the area. You know, I desperately wanted to see Thorndon restored, and so I helped people and encouraged people and tried to motivate them and tried to lead by example. And now it's restored and it's a wonderful place to live, and I'd suggest it's probably one of the best places in the world to live.
How unique are those buildings of Thorndon? In a world standard, how unique are they? In that cluster altogether of big and small and surrounded by their own little gardens and walkways?
I think it's very unique. I mean, quite a number of historians have said they are, and they're certainly unique in New Zealand, and you don't find it anything quite like it except a few houses on the rocks at Sydney. And not nearly the same, of course. They were
no, because they're not standalone ones, are
no,
they, those ones?
No, they aren't.
They're joined together, a lot of them. Right. Does the fact that we built so many little standalone houses of different sizes and shapes, does that say something about us as people?
Well, of course it does, yes.
What does it say about us?
It says we don't...
don't like sharing.
No, that's right. Yeah, we don't. We came here to get away from that.
Do you think Wellingtonians are starting to feel about Thorndon, say in the same way that Sydneyites think about the rocks?
I don't think that the Sydneyites think too much about the rocks. Actually, I think the Wellingtonites think about Thorndon in a far more parochial and in an ownership role than they seem to do in Sydney. I actually went over there to have a look and I strolled around. It is a very interesting area. If I was being parochial about that and was asked to comment, I'd say, well, the rocks is a very interesting area. Mind you, it is all the same. The veranda houses and the big stone buildings, though obviously they have a row upon row effect, whereas in Thorndon it is an absolute enchantment. You can walk from one building to another and find that you're looking at something and it's a tease to the mind. Is that 1840s or is it 1900s? Is it a rebuilding of something? Or it's certainly, it has the variety of styles.
Now tell us, what advice would you give to communities that are struggling with this idea that they've got old housing stock and they desperately want them to be preserved, but there's no money for it and they can't convince their city council to do something about it?
You've got to go out and actually knock on people's doors and have printed off in the most simple way possible the idea that what you're trying to do, have it on paper, so that you can talk to people and give it to them. And if you can get the community on side, that is really the linchpin of battle.
One of the campaigns, by the time the Thorndon Society was formed, that took place was they got everyone within the E-zone to write a letter saying why they liked living in the place. And everybody did that. It was quite interesting. The people that were involved in the campaign and had begun to understand something about town planning gave very kind of erudite reasons why, but the ordinary people just said what they felt. And it was very, really very human and very good. They liked their neighbours. They liked walking to work. They found it a friendly atmosphere. And even one man, whose wife had had a breakdown, said that he didn't think she could live he could keep her at home if she lived anywhere else.
I think the Thorndon Society had a three-pronged attack. It said, let us make everybody interested in Thorndon. Let's really become a showpiece. So they ran the Thorndon Fair. They closed the road. And they invited everybody to come to the Thorndon Fair. And the Thorndon people then opened their doors. They put probably illicit wine bars into their houses. Where the houses had been rehabbed in some way, they invited people in to come and have a look at what can be done with these buildings. They had open homes. They invited people to join in all the fun of the fair.
I don't want to
So you've got your little helpers here, Santa.
Oh, aren't they marvellous? Aren't they marvellous? They're all from Thorndon School, and I think what a wonderful school that is.
There's
so many wonderful children.
Okay, we're on our way.
Every morning have a cup of coffee, every morning have a cup of tea, every morning have a cup of coffee, every morning have a cup of tea.
Those groups that lived in Thorndon, which is the Chinese Anglican community, the Ngāti Paniki Māori community, the schools and residents who were interested in horses owned horses, bought their horses in and gave horse rides to kids. And the money was put back in to make the fun of the fair and to make Wellington people try and own Thorndon too. And to do that, you need organs like a newsletter. And it has to be witty and chatty, and you get to get your sense of community going. So we had Christmas parties, winter solstice parties. We did garden walks. And invited the community to become party to that. And I can remember some of the houses, and God bless the Leniston people who own the moorings up in Glenbervie, which is a very large house, which gave us the temerity to invite Thorndon to the Leniston's house for a winter solstice party. And at one part there, the place became so crowded, I thought that Thorndon might have actually turned up.
The party was held for Thorndon residents in Janet Paul's garden. And I remember as everyone came up and arrived at the lawn, Peter Fife, every 6 foot six of him, was there, I think in a Hawaiian shirt and sandals and so on, but he wore a tailcoat, beautiful tailcoat, and he announced everyone who came in. They had seats to one side for elderly people to watch all the activities, and they included a coconut shy, three-legged race, and a clown who had all the children following the leader in and out among the shrubbery, which they seemed to love. And the other thing I enjoyed particularly was a stand where the children could go for drinks, and they had large bottles of red, green and orange drink, and a notice alongside saying red drink 1 leaf, orange drink 2 leaves, and green drink 3 leaves. And the little children were very solemnly collecting the leaves and going up and paying for their drinks. The local greengrocer, the dairy and so on, had contributed the food. So we had a whole sliced ham that was just carried around with bread and butter, strawberries and Christmas mince tarts. So it was just a whole fun afternoon.
Mm. Now tell me a bit about how the Aorangi Street parties started, because you are hugely instrumental in running those, and you're a great organiser.
Well, the council let us borrow trestle tables and forms and chairs, which we just put across the street, and everyone sat at these. And then we had a spit and I think it was a hoggart that was roasting. I've never tasted in my life such beautiful meat. And the hoggart had been filled with rosemary, so the aroma was beautiful. Then after that, we seemed to go into smaller groups, and each house would have table and chairs and sun umbrellas outside.
And there's also a very strong Italian element in this street, yes?
Yes, which is absolutely lovely. They are just the most hospitable people. The casinos and Maria, who lived across the road, who died last year. But she was the sort of person, a jolly, happy woman who never stopped smiling. And no one ever moved into the street without she was over the next day with a plate of scones for them.
And people went to her with their troubles too.
Yes, they did. Yeah. She had one of these large, spacious kitchens, and everyone walked in from her garden, just into the kitchen door, straight into the kitchen, and sat down at the table. So you never quite knew who you were going to meet there.
No.
Maria's English was never very good, but somehow we managed to communicate. With a lot of waving of hands and shouting and laughing, we always managed to understand each other. Yeah. And of course, it's this whole business of people wanting to live nearer the city. Mm. And of course, it's an ideal place for walking to town.
Yeah.
And yet you've got the background of Tinakori Hills. Within 5 minutes from my house, I can see fantails, you know, flying across the walkway there.
Mm. For you, as far as you're concerned, if somebody said, no, I'm sorry, you're going to have to go and live in a modern house now, what's the difference that you would notice?
You know, the high stud is something, isn't it? It gives the rooms a feeling of spaciousness. Pocket-sized garden, you know, that if you're busy, you can keep under control. I think, too, you, in a period of time, you don't sort of suddenly start and do the whole place together. I think most people are like me. You work into a budget and you do the first stage, the second stage. So the house develops and grows with you and becomes very much part of your life.
Tell us a little bit about Aorangi Terrace.
Well, I sort of had to get a little bit of information together, because every time a Thornton walk comes through here, I'm warned, and I go out and speak to the group who are on the Thornton walk, and I tell them how that a spec builder built all these cottages. They're identical and very close together and on a very small piece of land, and they were built in 1900 and they were rented out at 7 and 6 a week.
In fact, this area is very near to the area that Catherine Mansfield wrote about in The Garden Party,
isn't it?
Where Scott the Carter was.
That's not
too far away.
No, I can look out my kitchen window and I can see the street where all these mean little cottages, working men's cottages were. They're not there anymore, but I know exactly where the cottage was, where Henry Scott lived. And the interesting thing is that Henry Scott was my great uncle, and he was the carter who was killed in the garden party, remember?
Yes,
and Catherine Mansfield came down with the food.
What new houses lack is that sense of continuity, the feeling that people have lived here before, older New Zealanders of character, like George Partosh, who used to warble operatic arias from his balcony, like Alexandra Prokrowski, who laughed loudly and squabbled violently with almost everyone in Thorndon, but people so enjoyed the passion of these arguments. People like Thorndon's 96-year-old Adam James.
Hello, Adam. How are you keeping?
Nothing good.
You still taking your horseradish mixture?
Yes. Not all the time, but now and again, you know.
Tell me what's the recipe for it again, because I've forgotten. I've told lots of my friends about this, and they say, that sounds like a very good pick-me-up. And it's how much horseradish and how much gin is
it? You don't need much horseradish. I don't grind it up. I just chop it up.
And how much gin about?
Well, a third of the jam jar.
Jam jar.
You can use it 3 or 4 times. Yeah. Yes.
I'll give it a go.
Oh, well, that helps me a lot. That helps me a lot. Oh, dear, aye. When I get into bed, I get a pain up here, but I can get rid of that one. I snap.
Give it a whack.
Give it a whack and a rub, and yeah. It'll go away.
Really?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Oh,
yes,
that's nice, yeah.
Give it a whack.
Yeah. Nice to see you anyway.
Yeah, right,
okay,
right,
bye-bye.
Yeah.
Living in an old suburb gives you a liking for the solidity of older houses and people. So it's no wonder that many Thorndonites regard the past demolitions in the same light as taking a chainsaw to your granny's ankles. It's taken 23 years of battling for the Thorndon Society to finally get City Council to come up with District Plan Variation number 14, which gives protection for all the pre-1930s buildings of Thorndon.
This is a first for New Zealand. Council officers needn't have feared. They thought that there may have been a property-owning backlash against what was being intended. If you're going to put machinery items in, which say that your individual property rights have just been eroded to the extent that if it's a pre-1930 building, I'm afraid you've got some much higher hurdles to jump now before you're allowed to do whatever you thought you could be, you know, do as of right.
You mean like
you're going to take this house down. Does it have merits? should it be retained? Is it part of the streetscape? Is it important to the streetscape? Does it fit into a line of houses? But I don't think the council officers should have been as timid as they were. The matter is already 6 months old, 7 months old. There hasn't been a backlash, though it has decided to challenge the right of council to do what it has done. Go down Murphy Street, which is now one of the gateways to Wellington, which I think is looking rather polished. Many of the buildings down there were going to be, many of them were demolished. The Wellington City itself demolished and owned the buildings down there and demolished them and put car parks in. Now you've got buildings, new buildings, which have been designed to fit in with existing buildings, to fit in with old school halls and fire stations. We pick those buildings up and shuffle them around and put them into reconfigure, but they are still there.
But in the dark struggle cold, I think about a garden by gentle eyes.
That sort of feeling you get when you see something that is in great danger of disappearing, suddenly shining forth, looking like the day it was built, and you recognise, well, it's all set for another 100 years now. It's a good feeling.
Should old acquaintance be forgot and never brought to mind?
In this programme, Thorndon's Mafia, you've heard the voices of Tony Burton, Martin Hill, Max Wilkinson, Aileen Finucane, Robin Archibald, Neil Harrop, Valerie Scott, Bernie Grice, Jack Perkins, and Adam James. Doogie McLean sang Auld Lang Syne, De Danham played Garden Valley, The Front Lawn sang Walk Around the House, and the Waratahs played Down Your Street.
For days of Auld Lang Syne.
Our thanks to Jack Perkins for excerpts from his Thorndon Fair tape. This second episode of Thorndon's Mafia was recorded and produced for National Radio by me, Dinah Priestley, with technical assistance from Gareth Watkins, Jason McClelland, and Kelly Buckland.